It's not that big of a deal.
You're overreacting.
You're just so emotional.
How to stop minimizing your spouse's needs. That's coming up next.
A marriage that takes on the fostering journey. That's what we call a fostering marriage. And this is the show where you learn to keep your marriage the priority and make fostering fit into it, not the other way around.
Welcome to the Fostering Marriage Podcast. Today we're discussing the hurtful practices of minimizing your spouse's needs, thoughts, and feelings, and how to do a better job of prioritizing them.
Hey, I wanted to do the show opening.
Aww,
you
I'm
stole
sorry.
It from me.
You can do it. We can record again.
You weren't minimizing it.
Oh, I'm
sorry. I was trying to get you to minimize my emotions.
Yeah, that's not really my thing, but...
It's not your style?
It's not my style.
Well, I guess
that's
a good
thing.
I just
run and cry and hide.
Is that your style?
That's my style.
Just completely avoid and
exactly.
Be a puddle in the closet?
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what I'd say to that? You're so emotional.
It's so true.
So yeah, we're getting into this thing. You guys may already be cringing. You may already be listening to this being like, wait a minute, I do that. Or shoot, my spouse does stuff like that. You know, we're talking about this today. We're making light of it up front. And it's a really, really heavy and serious topic.
Yeah.
Because it really comes down to undervaluing your spouse and undervaluing their emotions and their thinking. And then being critical and judgmental. So this is one of those very vulnerable episodes that's like we have to take a really hard look at ourselves. But our goal, as always, is to normalize these things that happen in marriage and how we can communicate when we falter, when we're not at our best. And it's good to be able to normalize it and talk through it. And we're going to give a whole bunch of advice and tips. And we've not always been great at this. It's things that we've learned to focus on and to do better with and be very intentional with. Why? Because communication either creates unity or it creates disunity. And this kind of thing of minimizing each other, saying controlling things to each other, especially in moments of stress, are pretty common in marriage. And so we thought, you know what? Let's get into this on the show.
Yeah. So let's just hop right in with the impact of minimizing and undervaluing your spouse. Some of those consequences of doing that is that you're going to have disconnection in your marriage. Your spouse, if you are the one who is minimizing, may feel bitterness and resentment towards you. And there's always hurt feelings when somebody is minimizing you. You may feel angry or guarded. This, I know, can be me. Back in early days, I know when there would be comments made in my direction, I would just kind of put up a wall and not want to be vulnerable or share things or be connected. Isolation is another aspect that can happen. And I think that comes from that guardedness and not wanting to share or be vulnerable. Poor mental or emotional health can also be a very serious consequence of being belittled or undervalued.
Yeah, especially when it's constant. And, you know, you don't have healthy boundaries in your marriage. And, you know, healthy boundaries, you know, I love how Dr. Melody, who was on the show a couple months ago, you know, she says that boundaries are either for connection or protection.
Mm.
And in marriage, you're already in a vulnerable relationship. You're in an intimate relationship where you're opening yourself up to someone very special. And then so you've opened yourself up, your guard is down perhaps, and then all of a sudden here comes a minimizing comment or a controlling comment, or you know, you're just too impatient. You're just that. And these are controlling statements. They're telling somebody how you think and what you do isn't good enough. And I disapprove of it. And when you're in an intimate, vulnerable relationship, man, these are such cutting and damaging things to do and say. But, you know, it fits that cliche of, you know, that family always gets the worst of us.
Mm-hmm.
And friends and other people get the best of us. And we just kind of let it rip and we're very loose with our tongue with those who are closest to us, especially if we come from a control family. a family that was judgmental or critical, or just, you know, just verbally abusive even, that we can find ourselves being very loose with our tongue and our judgments. But words either connect or words cut.
Yeah, you know, interestingly, as you're saying that, one of the things that I'm thinking of is I don't always speak the things that maybe I'm thinking or feeling that if I said them, they would be belittling. But they're still damaging for me to be thinking them because it's still creating that disconnection. It's still creating that barrier between us.
Yeah, it's like sometimes part of the growth process is self-awareness and being able to catch yourself being judgmental in your mind. And then we can, well, really it's catching yourself when you do it. It's like, do you hear yourself being critical or being judgmental? And I'm not saying being that way and then, you know, giving it an excuse of, well, I'm just being real. You know, it's like you are slow with that or whatever it may be. That's like, you know, you said as we were even preparing for this podcast episode that it's so important to talk about. There may be some truth to the thing that you're saying.
Yeah.
That someone may be overly emotional, disproportionately emotional. They may be slow at something. They may do something in a weird way, or they may cut cucumbers in a strange or different way or a way that's different than you. It's not the thing. It's how we say it.
Yeah.
It's how we address stuff. Are we just the, God, it's like you cut so slow and it's just so, it's so hurtful in how it's coming out of your mouth. And then if a person struggles, if your spouse struggles with you, then you flip it around and you make it their problem.
Yeah.
This well, is you the are stuff slow. I used to do.
Yeah.
Well, you are slow. I'm just saying what I'm observing. It's not in those situations. It's not what you're seeing. It's how you're saying it. That's the hurtful thing. And that's what we've got to be able to get a great handle on.
So what does minimizing or undervaluing look like? Dismissing concerns, you know, when your spouse expresses worries or concerns, things like you're overreacting or it's not that big of a deal. Those are the types of comments that dismiss their feelings.
Yeah. So once again, on those kinds of statements, those are controlling things to say. It is so important to see that. You are setting someone's reality by telling you're overreacting. It's not that big of a deal. You're not just minimizing, you're controlling your spouse. If they're allowing your words to get into their brain and impact them, that you're being controlling because it's, I don't like the way you're thinking. I don't like the way you're feeling. I don't like the way that you're doing it. And now I'm going to tell you what you're doing is wrong rather than discuss the thing. Hey, it's like, hey, could I show you a different way to cut those? Because I think just the way that you're cutting them is a little bit unsafe. Can I show you a different way to hold the knife or whatever it may be? Rather than, why are you cutting it like that? What are you doing? Has anyone ever taught you how to cut anything before?
Yeah.
And it's so like, are you talking about wanting to disconnect your spouse from you? That is the fastest way to do it right there.
Yeah. Comparative suffering, saying things like, why are you upset about this when there's bigger problems in the world?
Oh boy.
Or, I've been through worse. Those things invalidate your spouse's struggles by comparing them to others. I see this on Facebook all the time.
It's controlling.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
Yeah.
It's minimizing and controlling. It's very, very hurtful things to say because you got to search yourself to be like, what is your problem when your spouse is struggling with something like that? Why are you struggling? Why is it not okay that they are struggling with something? Is it fear? Is it you're in a season of stuff and it's like, man, I just don't want to deal with this one more thing, one more emotional thing. I just can't tolerate it anymore. Because if so, for one, that you got to see that's all about you.
Yeah.
You're making things all about you. And yes, you may be tired and worn down by some things, but we have to watch our speech and what we're saying there. Because think about being on the receiving end. What if you're the one who can communicate in these ways? Again, we're not trying to guilt and shame here on the episode. We're trying to draw light, normalize, and talk through very common communication struggles that spouses can have so that we can do better. Because we're trying to work on teamwork and being unified in our marriages. This is the stuff that gets in the way. Yep. So we've got to be able to address it and solve it and get better with it. That's why we're talking about that. All these kinds of things that are very vulnerable. But if you're the spouse who can communicate in those ways, flip the script. Flip it around. What if you're on the receiving end of that? And say you come home from work. Let's just say you're the working spouse. And you come home and that you've actually had a, in your leader or your manager spoke to you that way. In the ways that actually you can find yourself speaking to other people or your spouse in your life. How did you feel? Mad? Pissed off? Felt like a failure? Felt like you're letting people down? And so that's what's happening to your spouse when you speak that way. All these kinds of things we're talking about here, they all are pretty much force of habit. We've probably done these things and communicated in these ways for years and years in our life. But it reaches a point, just like where I had to have perspective years ago, that first started showing me, dude, you can be a jerk. You can be minimizing, dismissive of emotions, you know, put things back on you, Mary Beth, put things back on you that's like, well, you're just going to deal with that. You're going to have to solve it. Like, I was good at all this kind of stuff and would manipulate things to where I would come out the winner and you would be the positioned as the problem yeah. or the emotional one.
Yeah.
And that you're just going to have to go fix that because there's nothing I can do with that. There's another word for communicating like this. It's called narcissism. Hmm. That's what it's called. And this is what this stuff that I could do. Why? Because it leaves me having to shoulder no responsibility for the issue. And I could definitely get myself out of it where I have no responsibility for this problem. You're struggling with something, you're bringing it up, and it's all your problem.
Yeah.
And I would work it that way.
Yeah.
And you would feel completely hurt and emotional and disconnected.
Yeah. So just another example of this is ignoring emotional needs. If your spouse is seeking emotional support from you and you respond with indifference, or you change the subject, or you pick up your phone, or you just in any way just show, I don't really care, that is shutting your spouse down.
Yeah, I think those of us who can struggle with vulnerability and struggle with emotions can really go to this kind of a place. Or those of us who are very, very, who pride ourselves on being very logical and rational and can view an emotional spouse as being weaker or less than, there's a lot of pride in that.
Yeah. Sarcasm and mockery is another way that you can minimize your spouse. Just shutting them down with sarcastic comments or making fun of their concerns, it can be very hurtful to them. So, for example, oh, you're a real victim, aren't you?
Yeah, or, that's a good one. That will get you hugged and kissed by your spouse like fast, saying stuff like that. Yeah, so this is thinking about like being a kid and how kids can tease each other or they can make fun of each other. And, you know, maybe you were a kid who were teased, it was made fun of as a kid. Remember how hurtful that is. You know, that as adult, it's like we can do stuff like this. And sometimes maybe we're the spouse that's like, you know what? I'm just playing. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
And you try to excuse the thing that you're saying, even though your spouse is telling you, I don't like this.
Yeah.
They're trying to set a boundary with you, but you still want to be in control and you want to win. And so you'll even dismiss it and be like, and just lower it to make it something that wasn't that big of a deal. Basically communicating that there's nothing wrong with what I'm doing. You're overreacting to this.
Yeah.
That is no communication.
Yeah, that's so good. I can think of like when I'm talking to the kids and teaching the kids about teasing, because we're a family of high eyes, you know, and we like to tease and be playful. But sometimes that can cross some lines. And so we've had to talk about and teach, listen, if somebody doesn't like the way that you're teasing or the way that you're playing, then it's no longer teasing and playing, is it? Because teasing and playing is fun and playful and enjoyed by everybody. So if it's not enjoyed by everybody, you're no longer teasing.
Yeah,
you're now
exactly.
bullying.
Yep. You're now Exactly. And your sibling is trying to set a boundary with you, and healthy boundaries are a part of healthy relationships. And so it's recognizing, oh, this person doesn't like it. They're trying to set a boundary with me. I need to honor and respect that.
Yeah. Downplaying achievements is another example. If your spouse shares an achievement or something that they're proud of, and you're just like, that's not a big deal, or anyone could have done that, it undermines their feelings of accomplishment.
Yeah, can't you just feel how hurtful that is?
Yeah.
And like, we've all been here.
Yeah.
We've either done this stuff or we've been on the receiving end of it, of just minimizing these kinds of things. And, you know, another thread is, I keep coming back to that being controlling, but hear how selfish this stuff is.
Yeah.
It's like your thing just isn't that big of a deal. It's a selfish, controlling style of communicating. And if you ever wondered, it's why is it such a big deal in your relationship? It's because it's, as we're saying it, it's selfish and controlling ways to communicate.
Yeah, and it's hurtful. And so like all those things that we talked about at the beginning, where it's going to cause disconnection or hurt feelings or all those things, really, when it comes down to it, that's not what you want in your marriage. You want to be on the same page. You want to be unified and connected. And so that's why, you know, we want to talk through these things, because we've all done it. Belittling emotions, statements like, stop being so sensitive, you're always so emotional, can make your spouse feel like their emotions aren't valid or they're overreacting to something.
Another is just interrupting or not listening. So like when your spouse is talking about their feelings or their concerns, consistently interrupting them or not really listening, or, you know, picking up your phone and looking at that, or looking out the window, or watching what's on TV, or not making eye contact, it conveys that you don't value, or at minimum, you're not listening. And so I can still be guilty to this day.
Yeah.
That I need your reminder that, oh, you're doing that again.
Yeah. And I've caught myself doing it as well. I mean, it's like I said, we've done these things before. It's just we have to watch and be careful and be aware of what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Especially knowing personality style, like you referred to our family being a family of high eyes. That's a high eye on the disc profile. And they're extroverted, they're people focused, life of the party, very charismatic, very talkative people. And eyes at times can listen to talk. And that's where eyes can interrupt their spouse really quickly. Or someone says five words and it's like, oh yeah, I've done that. I've totally been there. And then you go on for 30 minutes and tell your story and thinking that the other person shared their stuff, but they didn't get anything in because you jumped in and unfortunately kind of made it all about you. And so eyes can do that all the time, where we just jump in, interrupt. We don't have bad intention in doing it.
Yep.
We just do it because of force of habit.
Yep. Another example is offering solutions instead of empathy. Just like you were talking about, you know, sometimes in an attempt to be helpful, you might jump to offer solutions or jump into that conversation. Oh, I've experienced that. This is what I did. You know, instead of
just do this.
Yeah.
Just
instead of listening to everything that they want to share and acknowledging what they're going through.
So when I'm counseling couples, something I find myself telling them a lot is that when one of you all is saying something that's a problem, or it's a challenge or a struggle, you can say as the listening spouse, hey, it's like, do you want me to listen or do you want my input?
Yeah.
Ask the question.
It's a great question.
What do you want them to do? And so much of the time, we know all we want is a listening ear.
Yeah.
We know what to do. We know how to fix it. We know how to solve it. Like, I'm a fixer and my intent is to just help. And so years ago, you know, I remember us having a conversation that you were like, hey, when you jump into fix solve mode, when I'm sharing something I'm struggling with you on, it made you feel like you're too stupid to solve it.
Yeah.
On your own. And that's now, it's like, but that wasn't my intent.
Yeah.
But I was contributing to conflict with you.
Yeah.
And so we had to talk through that to be able to see that's like, yeah, I have to watch where I jump into advice or fix mode and just listen to you.
Yeah.
Or find out, what do you want? What do you need? Because how many times do we vent or we share things with our spouse because it's a safe place? And they go into, well, just do this. Well, just do that. And in the moment, it's like, really? Are you really? really? Is that what you're doing right now? And it's triggering for you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I know I'm such a processor. And so I want to talk out, you know, what do I want to do? How do I want to solve this? And, you know, I'm sorry, but walking around just talking to myself is weird sometimes. Let me just talk to you. But I don't want you to solve it. I don't want you to come up with the solutions. I just want to process with another person to be my listening ear. And sometimes I do want your input, but sometimes I don't.
Sometimes you don't. Exactly. Yeah. All right, so let's move forward and talk about some strategies for prioritizing each other's needs. Number one, we've probably all heard of it. Active listening. Yeah, we've all heard that, Joel. It's like, here's my question is, do you do it? It's not a matter of what we learn. It's not a matter of what we know. It's a matter of, are we doing those things? It's kind of like the date night, connection night episode we did. It's like, yeah, date nights, connection times. Yes, but are you doing it? That's the thing. How many of us read books that are like, oh my gosh, that was phenomenal. We highlight and star stuff, and I'm going to do all this stuff that I just learned, and we don't do anything. We move on to the next book because we can't prioritize the action steps. Listening is so connecting. We were just talking about it. When I'm going into fixed advice mode sometimes with you, it's not connecting. It's disconnecting. But when I find out what your needs are, or you find out what your spouse's needs are, that I don't need your advice, I don't need your input, I just need to talk with you, and I just need you to listen to me right now. That's my need. Now we have communication that's connecting rather than disconnecting.
I so had a thought, and I was listening to you, so now it's gone. What do you do?
Do you feel connected or disconnected?
I feel disconnected from my thought, but connected to you. See? I think that's more important.
There it is. Case closed. Thanks for listening to the Fostering Marriage Podcast.
Oh my goodness. Well, point number two, regular communication. Setting aside regular times to check in with each other. You know, again, our connection episode, that's what this is for. Put that time regularly. At least connecting weekly, though, even if you're not going out.
You know, and it doesn't have to be an hour. It doesn't have to be 30 minutes. Sometimes it can be 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It can be 10 minutes to just have a connection conversation. That sometimes, like in my mind, I can go to it, well, if it's not going to be a date night, connection night, or if it's not going to be an hour of conversation, or if it's not going to be, like, I can think that kind of way. It's that perfectionistic kind of a way that if it can't be this, then we won't do anything. And it's a bad way to think. So it's like sometimes it's like, you know what? We have 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Then great. 5 minutes is better than 0 minutes.
You know, it's funny. I was actually just thinking, we do at dinner time happy and sads. And we all share something that was happy in the day and all share something that was sad in the day. But the crazy thing is, I mean, it's... Everybody speaks for a couple few minutes or whatever, but
we're a family of high eyes. Let's be real.
Seriously, sometimes it's like it's been 45 minutes and
we're two
people.
It's a family of high eyes, not to digress too much, but we started this off with share one happy and one sad.
Yes.
And now, because it's high eyes, you know, the kids are like, well, this is a happy, and this is another happy, and this is another happy, because everyone wants the attention on them. It's so funny.
It can go on for a bit. But the thing is, it's very connecting.
Yes.
And we all can hear that, you know. And so I think even just small little things like that to check in with each other is so important.
Yeah, I mean, remove the kids. What if you just did that as adults?
Yeah.
I mean, how hard is this? What was a happy today? And what was a sad today? You know what you're going to end up talking about? You're going to talk about stuff you never talk about before. Because you never think to even share it with your spouse because it's 7 hours later.
Yes.
And or you're going to, you can ask questions like, what was a win today? What was a loss today?
Highs, lows.
Highs, lows. Yep. What's something you're looking forward to tomorrow? What's something you're not looking forward to tomorrow?
Yeah.
All you need to do is sometimes is just get a list of decent questions to ask. To have more important communication rather than, what do you want to do for dinner tomorrow? What's for dinner tomorrow night? Hey, do you want to work out in the morning? And we actually end up talking about more substantial things.
Yeah. As long as you're practicing number one, active listening.
Yes, exactly. I don't want that for dinner. Let's do this.
So number three is empathy and understanding. Try putting yourself in your spouse's shoes, especially when they're struggling. Understanding their perspective can help in responding more compassionately, more supportively, and just kinder.
Yeah, and this links back to listening too. That listening is also, is empathy. Or let me put it this way. Empathy shows up in listening. Where listening and empathy can be so powerful, you know, in your relationship. And again, for us fixers and advice givers, like this is a really good alternative to just listen, be empathetic, relate, find out what your spouse's needs are, you know, rather than doing your force of habit thing, which is just to give advice or just to fix or whatever it may be. Number four is managing expectations. Be realistic about what each of you can offer and receive. This means understanding and accepting each other's limitations, whether they're emotional, physical, or related to time and energy. It's just, the more we understand one another, the better expectations we can have. Yeah. And surprise, surprise, we are very different people than the person we're married to.
I love this because I feel like you really have to be generous with your spouse. You know, it's like, just because I need this isn't what you need.
Yeah, you may say things like, you know, well, I can do it. Well, that's not too much for me. Well, you're a different person with different gifts and talents and motivators and levels of discipline or lack of discipline. And that sometimes when we're in a marriage, it's almost like we become the one person so much that our expectations of our spouse we think should be ours. They should be able to do what we can do, and or whatever it may be. And it's like, that's a bad expectation to have, rather than really getting to know, you know, what are your strengths and your weaknesses and your personality style attributes and the things that you're passionate about and what are you not passionate about. And to really be able to, you know, there's so much wisdom and value and understanding how you're different as married people. Because it does lead to better understanding and then better expectations.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we go through different seasons too. So, you know, being the stay-at-home parent, I may be having a tough season as the mom because kids are just really struggling or something, you know. And so I may not have the normal capacity that I would have otherwise. Or maybe you're in a tough season with, you know, I don't know, maybe there's a parent who's passed away or something, or a relative that, or a friend.
Or work is just more stressful.
Yeah, work is stressful. There's so many things that we could be going through different seasons. And so being like, well, that was your capacity last week. That was your capacity last year.
You could do it then. You had no problem doing it last week.
Yeah.
What's different? And that's where it's like gain perspective. Yeah. Ask questions.
Ask questions, you know? Kindly.
Yes. Find out, like, where is your spouse? You know, where are you? But the kindness and communication is just can't be overstated.
Yeah.
Because that is so important. I mean, tone matters so much in how we ask things.
So number five, prioritizing self-care. Both partners seem to take care of their own emotional and physical well-being. It's hard to be supportive when you're feeling drained. So encourage each other and support each other in engaging in whatever self-care activities you need for you.
Going back to you don't need a date night episode, home spa night, my friends. Yes. There it is right here. Practicing self-care. You get to do a connection night and you get to do prioritizing self-care all at the same time.
Well, there you go.
How efficient.
Unless I don't need a spa night.
This is true. And I really never need a spa night. Let's be real. I'm not really that person. I like to lay in the tub every now and then. That's a new thing.
Something for our listeners to know about you.
Hey, this is a vulnerable show here. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm sorry that I belittled your bathing.
You minimized my passion.
I'm sorry. Wow. You're really taking it next level.
Being lazy and getting into a tub and reading a book.
Oh, okay.
How nice, though.
It is nice. Okay.
You don't like that? Moving on.
Moving on.
Number six, seeking help when needed. So, man, some of us can struggle so big with this. So sometimes it is so beneficial to actually seek support. So in a big way, this could be of all the way to a therapist, a counselor, some type of trusted advisor, probably a close friend. But asking for help when we need it is so important, or actually supporting your spouse to actually have to reach out and have support from somebody. That I think, you know, we are such big Dr. Melody Aguayo fans around here that we've learned, because we've learned so much working with her, that our desire would be, if you're going to do fostering and this type of a journey, it should be law that you have to have an amazing coach or support system that comes with you. And most of us don't have that.
Yeah.
Most of us don't start with that. We may get it over time. But when you really get it, you realize the value of it. You realize how much you don't know, how much you're missing. And then the hope, all that you learn, the confidence that you get when you actually have outside help, it is absolutely priceless.
I know. I feel like we started with Dr. Melody a year ago, and it's been such a game changer for us. And I know time after time we've said, man, we should have done this from the beginning, from the start. If only we had known, we totally would have done this, because we struggled through. And did we get through a lot of things? Sure, we absolutely did. Could we have done a better job?
Did we fail? Let me be real about it.
Yeah.
Did we fail miserably at times
on
stuff?
At times, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, we muddled our way through it, and we've gotten through so much, and there's been a lot of growth. But how much more growth could there have been if we had had that support from the get-go?
Totally. And we totally get that a lot of people just, you don't have the funds or the ability to get it. But for instance, like, I mean, Dr. Melody's, her $50 a month program, it is so cheap for the value that you're going to get and what you're going to learn and how much it's going to help you. And we came into all this again. It's like we weren't struggling coming into this. I think we had the intentions that a lot of other couples do, is that, as I think as she put it once, that the child's despair is going to stop when they get here. Their healing is going to begin. And we go in with these expectations, and then those expectations become totally unmet. And now your despair starts, and you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And you don't know how to handle it. And you don't know what is wrong. Like, where is all this crazy coming from inside of me? Depending on your child and who you are and how you and what your triggers are. But this is pretty common. And then it affects everybody in the family.
Yep.
And now you're living in despair or grief. And then it's not good to continue to go on just grinding and burning out through all of that turmoil. It's so important to get help.
Well, and when you are grinding it out, that's when you're more likely to go and make those comments that are controlling or unkind or just lacking in gentleness and generosity, because you're tired. You're worn out.
Yep. So number 7 is quality time together. It's how do you get it? It's how do you do, what do you do that you both enjoy? What are some things? Again, it's like finding connection and communication time. It's just so important that you've got to find that QT, that quality time together. And then another, number 8, is expressing appreciation and complimenting. And like Mary Beth and I have both talked about this, and that we both want this, but we both suck at it.
Which is so weird. I feel like we would be good at the thing that we want.
Yeah, we're not good at it. It's not habit to be complimentary. It's like I just sent you like even a text this last week. Oh, it was on resiliency, because it just hit me when I'm here at work and there was something going on, and it hit me that it's like, man, it's like you were so resilient. Like you just come back to the drawing board over and over and over again with, especially not, we have 4 kids, but especially with our 6-year-old who has the most struggle, who has trauma in his first 2 years of life. And he has disorganized attachment. And if you know about these things, you're like, yeah, that's my kid. But my point is right now, it's like, I need to text that to you now so I don't forget, because I recognize in that. Because to me, it's just so normal. I've just come to expect that it's like, oh yeah, that's just what you do. And I think I can take things for granted. And rather than being like, hey, call that out, say something, compliment, be affirming in that way. But, you know, we've talked about it for years and I still stink at it.
Yeah, well, so do I. The thing that I like about what you said is that you texted it right then when you were thinking about it. I mean, we are all so busy. And I think I've had these moments of, oh man, Joel did this. This was so great. This was so helpful. And I don't just shoot off a text to say, hey, thank you for doing that. That was really helpful, because I'm in the middle of something. So I don't make it important. And I think I'll tell him later. Well, hours go by, a million things go by, and all of a sudden I've forgotten what I was going to say.
Yeah, I think it's because we probably did not come from homes and families that was their strong suit, or words of affirmation. That both of our sets of parents had plenty of good things and strengths. But as we've talked about, it's like, I don't think that was one of their strengths.
Yeah.
And I think we're good at that with the kids, to the point where it's like, I think we can overpraise.
Yeah.
And it can be so habitual to dispraise, which isn't always a good thing, that we're learning. And again, go read Hunt Gather Parents, a really, really super cool book. But I think with our kids, that they're learning that, because we tend to be that way. But I think with each other, adult to adult, is where the weakness is.
Yep. Well, number 9 is setting boundaries. Establish healthy boundaries within your relationship. This includes respecting each other's needs for space, for privacy, for individuality. I feel like you're really good at that, by the way.
I think that we both do a good job here, but we've had to learn it.
I was trying to express appreciation.
You know? Oh, thank you. I didn't even catch that. You know? Well, I thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. But this is a huge one. Again, boundaries are for either for protection or connection, and they're a part of every healthy relationship. We all know, like, the unhealthy relationships we have in our life and our need for boundaries there. And sometimes we can be either an oversetter of boundary setting or an undersetters of boundaries. And I think a lot of fostering type minded people are probably more under boundary setters because of our hearts to want to just take care of people and be nice and not have conflict and all those kinds of things. But we also have a 2-part series on that. Go back and listen to the 2-part series we did on setting healthy boundaries. I feel like it was like a masterclass in setting healthy boundaries. There was a lot of ground.
There was a lot in there
that we covered in those episodes. So if that's a weakness of yours, go back and listen if you haven't listened to those. Also, you know, Dr. Cloud and Dr. Henry Cloud, John Townsend have the gold standard book on healthy boundaries. There's a ton of great information. But yes, this is a part of prioritizing in connection with your spouse, is having healthy boundaries. Because I say that because it can sound like, well, gosh, that sounds like I'm disconnecting or distancing myself from my spouse. Healthy boundaries don't do that.
No.
Healthy boundaries are, oh, that's what you need. I don't need that. There's a boundary. Or a boundary sometimes just sounds like, no,
yeah,
I don't want to do that.
I think sometimes a boundary simply, I need some time for myself right now.
Yep.
That's it.
Perfect. In order to protect you.
Yep.
In your own emotional needs.
Yep. Well, number 10 is shared goals and values. Revisit and reaffirm your shared goals and values. This can help in aligning your efforts and understanding what you both want from the relationship.
Yeah. And like, we just did this. We just did our goal setting. Like, the last few years, we've been weaker. But this last December, coming into the year, we sat down and we reestablished goals and or habit creation that we wanted to work on. We need to bring those out. We need to look at them, because goals are worthless unless you're actually reviewing and looking at them. They just don't need to live in the Google Doc. But being able to talk through that stuff and think through, you know, what and dream and have a vision and what do you want to work on and support each other in those goals is so valuable. And once again, it gives you substantial, important things to talk about. It gives you new stuff to talk about. You know, in a great goal setting framework, you don't have to be overcomplicated with goal setting. You don't have to go buy courses and stuff. Just look at something like the basic thing, like Zig Ziglar's Wheel of Life, that breaks down life into 7 areas. With spiritual life and relationship with God, what's your goal? Where do you want to be? What habit do you want to create? You personally, family goals, social goals, financial goals, career goals, whatever it may be. And what do you want to achieve? What do you want to do? And what do you want to work on? And it gets you to think. It gives you intentionality and a simple framework to come up with some things that you want to do better with. But most importantly, I think, because you're married, is that it gives you great stuff to support each other in and to communicate about.
Yeah, I love, I was thinking about one thing is what vision or what goal can you set as a couple that you want to achieve together as well?
Yeah, we used to do that too. Do you remember that? It's part of our goal setting. Yeah. You set goals like that?
Yeah, we haven't done that for a while.
No, not that part.
But, it's just another aspect that can unify you and,
Yeah, keep you on the same page. Yeah. And then also values is, values. Think about core values. That most companies have core values. And because core values, a lot of times core values are made and they're put on something and they're published in an employee handbook or they're posted on the wall in a break room or a lobby or whatever. And like, yep, those are our core values. Core values are a statement of what is most important within that organization. But what are they meant to do? Create unity on the team. Because it gives everyone something to unify around. That this is what we value the most. It's like in the business I work in. God is the number one core value. God is. We make decisions based on God. Because that's the second part of what core values are meant to do. Guide decision making.
Yeah.
To unify culture and to give the team guidance on how do we make decisions here. So God is number one. Integrity is in there. Excellence is in there. Leaning in the direction of other personality styles is in there. The customers who puts food on our plates, honor them, take care of them. We have 13 core values in our business. It sounds like a lot. A lot of companies have 5, 6. We have 13 because that's been the decision of the leadership team. But why can't you do this for your family? What are your family's core values? And do you talk about them with your kid? Do you model them most of all to be able to show this is how we make decisions in this family? Kindness, compassion, empathy, faith, service, fried chicken. Like, what is, whatever it is, what's most important to you?
I think most people can get behind fried chicken.
Love fried chicken. It's not on my 75 hard diet, though, but I love fried chicken. It's an excellent thing. I'm from the South, so that's how we do things. But goals and values give you things to unify around. And to define decision-making and sometimes even hold each other accountable of being like, hey, that's one of our core values. Hey, let's talk about that. This seems like that's a struggle right now or whatever it may be. And you can support each other in coming back to living out that core value, especially when it comes to modeling these kinds of things for our kiddos.
Yeah, I love that.
So to wrap up here, prioritizing your spouse's needs, thoughts, and feelings creates a stronger bond in your marriage. That's what it's all about. We're after unity. We're after bond. We're after connectedness. So friends, thank you as always for listening to the Fostering Marriage podcast. And thank you to Laura for the incredible review you left a little while back. You said, or she said, in case I'm sure you're probably listening, Laura, but thank you so much. You said, I wish I'd found this sooner. This podcast has been a godsend. It's so comforting to know that I'm not alone in these struggles and to get powerful advice and specific tips on how to overcome them. I will say, when we saw that come in, that we were so flattered and humbled by that, because we've never met in person. And so as content creators, we want people to listen, and to get feedback from time to time it's just very, very heartwarming. So thank you for taking the time to listen to the show, and especially to leave a review. Especially that was so incredibly kind. So thank you so much, Laura. So if you enjoy this podcast, do like Laura did, rate and review it wherever you listen, Spotify, Apple, wherever the heck you listen to this theme, because it helps other fostering families find it. And a huge announcement that we are going to start offering marriage coaching, that we are servants and this is what we want to do. And we know this journey is difficult and hard, and we want to be able to help out wherever we can. So if you are interested in doing marriage coaching with Mary Beth and I, go to fosteringmarriage.com, click on marriage coaching. It's a pretty basic page there of information, and you can get in touch with us there. So as always, we hope this has been helpful for you. Join us on the next episode of the Fostering Marriage Podcast.